In the month of June, we had what we call Kickstart Your Summer, and we had just various speakers to come in on Wednesday night. It gave us a chance to meet people from other congregations, preachers from other congregations, and get to know them better. And, we'd always like to have that feedback, how you feel about Kickstart Your Summer. Is this the third year we've done it? If I'm not mistaken, it's probably the third year we've had the month of June devoted. It may only be the second year. But there seems to be a lot of interest in that, and people say, well, it's really good to hear somebody other than Dan or David preach. And so we take that, that doesn't bother me at all for you to say that and everything. What we're trying to do is change lives, and if that really helps us, and I love hearing these guys and getting to know them and to be a part of, let them be a part of what we're trying to be here. But that shortens our quarter, since we run on a three-month system. And to have topics that run 3 months, and I have no idea why we do that. I'm sure it has to do with school and all the rest. But we only have 2 months in this quarter. So, and I say this for the benefit of visitors and the like. We're at the end of July, and we spent 1 month already talking about the matter of personal work. And so we'll take this month and the next month and deal with the matter of personal work. And just try to help each of us be reminded of the fact that the Lord wants us to see souls. That's an expression, and I don't know where you heard the expression. I heard it in New Zealand. Are you still seeing souls? And because it's difficult sometimes to see souls, especially when they're so obnoxious. You understand what I mean? I mean you're trying to deal with somebody out here, and they just get on your nerves. And it's hard. I don't even want to be around you. I mean, why should I talk to you about the Lord? You understand what I'm talking? And you know what I'm talking about. You know, you're eating at a restaurant, and you drop your fork, and your food is getting cold, and you've asked the waitress 3 times, "Could you get me another fork?" And you're trying to sit there, trying to decide whether to curse her out or to take your fingers and eat with it, eat it childlike or something like that. She still has a soul. And the fact she doesn't have a brain does not at all relieve you of your responsibility. And the fact that she may not even be interested in you does not relieve you of the responsibility of seeing souls. And that's something really, really important. And then you and I also need to be aware of the fact that people come into our lives and we're not always aware that they're here. And I've always found it interesting to talk to people, how did you come into the church? How does Joe Quigley come into the church? What a great, great story. Joe was what, 80, when he was baptized, 83? 86, yeah, he's got 2 birthdays, 85, 86 years of age, and Bonnie is parking her boat over here in the out off near Peanut Island somewhere, and Joe parks his boat right beside her boat. Now, Joe saw Bonnie. We can talk to Joe about this. He wasn't looking at souls, okay? But Bonnie was. Does that make sense? And now, all of that's developed. They're married and everything. And Joe loves this church. And you ought to talk to Joe sometime. Joe says, I've wasted the first 85 years of my life. My life started 2 years ago, 3 years ago, however long ago it was. That'll make you a soul winner. That'll make you a soul winner. When you see the joy that you can have whenever people find the Lord. I've got what class, was this our Tuesday morning class where we were talking about the Ethiopian eunuch? No, it was our Monday night class here on when we're looking at the book of Ezekiel. And we were talking about the Ethiopian's view of his conversion and Philip's view of his conversion. Now, I want you to think that. You know the story, Acts chapter 8. Philip is up in Samaria, preaching up in Samaria, and the Lord, the Spirit, tells Philip, you leave Samaria and you go down on the road to Gaza. And so Philip leaves and goes down to Gaza. Now, there's the Ethiopian, and he's riding in a chariot from Jerusalem over to Gaza. Now, I haven't looked at the map and done the mileage at all, but how far would it be from Jerusalem to Gaza? Well, it's about that far on the map. Well, how far is it from Samaria? Oh, it's that far from Samaria. Guess who left first? Philip is on foot. And if he's got 40 or 40 miles or so to go on foot, we're not talking about a one day's journey. And so here's Philip leaving, and then here's the Ethiopian. He's riding in a chariot. And Philip sees the man riding in the chariot. And the angel of the Lord says, go join yourself to that chariot. How does the Bible describe how Philip went to the chariot?
He ran.
Isn't that amazing? You know, Philip's got something. He knows, and so he runs over to the chariot. And it's amazing what he said and everything that's involved. This guy is a government official, secretary of the treasury of Ethiopia. And Philip says, do you understand what you're reading? Now, Philip gets into the chariot and teaches him about the Lord. I don't know if the Ethiopian, if Philip told the Ethiopian the background of the story at all. There's no way to know. Would not have been necessary at all for Philip to say, the Spirit told me to come down here, the angel of the Lord told me to come over here. He could have. He may not have. And I find it fascinating that years later, the Ethiopian might have been reading the book of Acts. You know, I got a weird brain, I think. But I mean, here's the Ethiopian reading the book of Acts. He thought, well, I didn't know that. And so the Ethiopian gets back to Ethiopian. Somebody says, what happened? Well, man, let me tell you what I found. And so he talks about his conversion and everything. And let's just assume for the moment Philip never told him anything. He didn't have to. His view of that was that here I was looking for truth, and God put me right there at that place. We got the background of the story. We've got Philip on the other side. We've got Philip knowing that the angel of the Lord said, you go to this place at this time. Now, wait a minute. You'd better not wait for an angel to tell you to do that. You know, this is not the way God works. Sometimes people would say, well, the Lord told me I just had to go talk to that person. Well, what about the person you didn't talk to that needed the gospel? You understand what I'm saying? There's a special circumstances that's involved in that. And you and I need to understand that the Lord has told us to go talk to that person. Just hadn't told us to go talk to that person. As you are going, preach the gospel. As you are going. And you and I need to have an appreciation of that. That's that story. And I say all of that to get to the end of that story. When they come up out of the water, the Spirit of the Lord does what in reference to Philip? Snatches him away. You got to read it carefully. Philip is standing there, and then he's not there. There's the miraculous affirmation that Philip, you've done this right stuff. This is right what you've done. And he said, and he went on his way rejoicing. That's Joe Quigley. And I would have said that if Joe were here. But you guys need to talk to Joe. If you've lost the joy of telling others about the Lord, just sit down and talk to Joe. Or talk to other individuals and just say, how'd you come into the church? Tell me what you found. And that's the motivation in your heart. That's the joy of having shared something really, really wonderful with another. Now, what I want us to do tonight is to talk about ways that we can do this. We challenged you, a month ago, the videos that are out there, we played that video that was out there. How many of you have seen the Jewel Miller video? If I say Jewel Miller, does that ring a bell? Well, not with everybody. And in a few minutes, we'll look at the Jewel Miller. Not right now. That'll be a little bit later. But there are just all sorts of ways of teaching the Bible to somebody else. There's a correspondence course. You know how many people have become Christians because of a correspondence course? And all it is to say, hey, we got this Bible study course. Would you like to take it? What a door opener that is. And the thing that we've got out there, the welcome desk, talks about ways you can learn about this church. And you could take up one of those booklets that has, it's got Buzzy's photo on the front of it. I can't remember who's on the front of that studying the Bible or something, but it shows him studying the Bible. And here's a way to study the Bible. And in there you could, and so it says we can come to your home, and you come to the building. Here's a Bible correspondence course. How difficult would that be to give to somebody if we're really serious about seeing souls? I think we're scared to death about the fact that we're going to meet, Madeline O'Hare. And she's going to challenge us to a public debate on the existence of God. And we're scared to death because, I think she's dead though, isn't she? Well, we ought to be scared about meeting her then. But I mean, that's our phobia about this. When all we got to do is to say to somebody, let me tell you what I've got in my life. And that's that come and see approach. And we've got to understand that. If Macy's having a sale, an unannounced sale, and you drop by Macy's and all of their shoes are 90% off. Ladies' shoes. Guys, you can hang out with it. You can back out of this one. But all of the ladies' shoes are 90% off. What are you going to do with it? I'm just going to go shopping. I enjoy shoes, and I'm not going to tell anybody. You wouldn't dare do that. You'd call the best friend you've got. Hey, let me tell you what I've got. Man, I've really, really, really got something. And we do it, don't we? If Chick-fil-A is giving away a free sandwich, Facebook friends of mine who sent a Facebook reminder to let me know that on Thursday of next week you can get free. What's wrong with having that same kind of joy about what we've got in Christ? Amen. That's an amazing thing. Jocelyn Abels, she's doesn't have transportation and she sort of considers herself a member here. And she lives how far south, Joe? You know where she lives?
Long way
south, anyway. And when she told the elders, when I get my car and when I get all that, I'll be back up here and everything. Jocelyn, just not every week. But she will just put a sermon. She'll put a link to a sermon on her Facebook. Most of her friends are outside. She hasn't been in the church but about, I think less than 5 years. And she's all of a sudden, she's still got this joy of Christianity. And so almost every week, it's rarely one of my sermons which insults me, but she'll put something on there about here's something you ought to read. Here's an article you ought to read. And there it is on Facebook. How difficult is that, guys? We've got this phobia of saying, well, I can't convert Madeline O'Hare, okay? It's like the fellow that told the guy who'd killed an 8-foot bear. Said, man, I wish I could kill a big 8-foot bear, but said, I just don't, I'm just not as big as you are. I'm just not as good as you are. And the big bear hunter said, yeah, but there are a lot of small bears out in the woods. And that's us. If Christianity really means something to us, then the joy that we have of Macy's shoes being on sale, or you can play golf over here at I can't think of a big course. What's the big course up north here that nobody's allowed to play on? Somebody help me with the name of that.
Seminole.
Yeah, Seminole's having free. Anybody that wants to, if your last name starts with a letter between A and Z, you can play for free golf at Seminole tomorrow. Man, we tell every friend we've got about that. What happened to Christianity? And there's been all kinds of ways to try to teach. I want to show you something that that my son Jonathan and I worked on 10 years ago. And the whole design of it was to develop a DVD. It was a CD because it uses PowerPoint. And the technology on it is such that you know, won't even play on most computers. And we're probably going to lock up the church's computer here in just a minute. But the whole thought behind that was to fix a CD that you could just hand to somebody that would just, the person you'd never ever be able to get to come to worship with you. And Jonathan, you know, took this, and it was my teaching, but Jonathan took it, and some of the churches up in Nashville took it, and they used it, converted three or four people. I got a letter from somebody. We converted three or four people in the last month, people that never would darken the doors of the church building. We just gave them the CD and let them take it home and study it. What I'm saying is, there are ways to do this. And all we got to do is open our eyes and see Facebook and see telephones and see sales at Macy and just see all of these things. And this is so amateurish, I almost didn't show this, okay? But it's just an avenue by which we could do. Buzz, I don't know if we can get it to play and if it'll lock up our computers. It locked up mine four times today. So here we go.
Thank you for having an interest in learning more about the Bible. It's a marvelous book, isn't it? It's a book that a lot of people have trouble understanding, but it may not be as hard as most people think that it is. Just open up the Bible and open up the very beginning pages. You'll find a table of contents that will begin to give you some clue about what this book is all about. You'll immediately see that there's an Old Testament and a New Testament. And underneath that listing are names of books like Genesis and Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers, books like that. What most people don't recognize is that the Bible, instead of just being one book, is a collection of 66 different books written by about 40 men over a period of 1,600 years. Failure to understand that makes the Bible more difficult for some people to understand. But just to have that in our background and our understanding will really, really help us as we try to learn the story of the Bible and find out what it's all about. Open up that Bible to the table of contents, and you begin saying, what's this book all about? Can I give you two sentences that might really help? Understand that Old Testament is summed up in the sentence, someone is coming. And as we shall see in this study, over and over again, the God of heaven said, someday someone will come. When you get to the New Testament, the sentence that describes the New Testament is, someone is here and he's coming back again. Let's go to the Old Testament and open up the Bible to the very first book of the Bible, the book of Genesis. The book of Genesis, the word itself means beginning. That'll give you some ideas to what's in that book. And as you begin studying the book of Genesis, you learn about the beginning of all kinds of you learn about the beginning of the world, the creation of God speaking and all of the things being created. You'll learn about the beginning of home. You'll learn about the beginning of sin. If you want to know where the languages come from the book of Genesis, you can learn about the beginning of languages, the beginning of nations. You'll learn the story of redemption as it begins in that book. It really is, honestly and truly, a book of beginnings. Might I suggest to you, as you try to understand what the Bible is all about, to recognize that the first major character in the Bible is Adam. You know the story of the creation, of the 6 days of creation, and God resting on the seventh day, and finally he placed Adam and Eve, the first man, the first woman, in that beautiful garden, the Garden of Eden. And he gave them only one commandment that they could disobey, and it had to do with the fact that they were not to eat of the fruit of the tree that was in the midst of the garden. Genesis chapter 2 and verse 16 and 17 says, of every tree you may eat, but of the tree that's in the midst of the garden you shall not eat of it. For in the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die. God said to Adam and Eve, you're going to die the day you eat of that fruit. If you know the story, and I'm confident that most individuals will know that story of how Eve first ate of that fruit, tempted by the serpent, Then she brought the fruit to Adam, and Adam ate of that fruit, and so sin entered into the world. We said that the book of Genesis is a book of beginnings. It tells about the beginning of marriage, of God bringing Adam and Eve together. But it also tells us something that's vitally important to understand, and that is that the book of Genesis is a book that tells us about the beginning of sin. For you see, before sin came into the world, Adam and Eve and God had absolute fellowship. The description of their life is summed up in the words, walking with God in the cool of the evening. Can you imagine a world where there was no sin and no death and no heartache? Nothing in this world that was evil. But the reality is that when sin entered into the world, death entered into the world. For you see, death means separation. And so Adam and Eve were separated from God. That's what sin does. And spiritually, they were dead. Prior to the entrance of sin into the world, they were alive. They had fellowship. They had communion with God. But when sin entered into the world, God drove them out of the garden. And they were separated from God. And in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15, there is that first promise of the coming of that someone. In the words regarding that seed of woman who someday would bruise the head of that old serpent, the devil. Someone is coming. But we cannot spend forever looking at those early chapters in the book of Genesis. Driven out of the garden, they began to have children. Go from that first period of the creation and jump nearly 1,600 years to the time of Noah. Genesis chapter 6 tells us that the time had arrived that every thought and imagination of man's heart was on evil continually. And it repented God that He'd made man. The world had become so corrupt that a holy God could not stand to look on the wickedness that was here. God was sorry that He had made man. And so He said, I'll destroy the man that I've placed on this earth. But you want to understand the nature of God. Genesis chapter 6 and verse 8 tells us that not only is God just, not only does God punish sin, but our God is a God of grace. For that verse says, Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. And whereas we learn in the story of Adam and Eve that sin separates man from God, in the story of Noah, we learn that we learned that God brings judgment against sin. It's a part of His nature. And His nature demanded that there be the judgment of this world, the destruction of mankind. For man was evil. But Noah found grace. I'm confident you know the story of the flood, of the separation of Noah by the waters that were before the flood that brought him over into a world after that flood, a world that was purified. Been purified by the judgment of God, and the waters of the flood had brought him from a world of sin back into a pure world. There are about 10 generations in that 1600 years from Adam until Noah. If you'll try to understand what the Bible is all about, I'd suggest you remember the story about Adam and that you know the story about Noah. There's a third story you need to know, and that's the story about Abraham. Marvelous indeed is the faith of Abraham. His father was an idolater. And yet, Abraham had faith in God. God came to Abraham when he lived in Ur of the Chaldees and said to him, get out of this place and go to a place that I will show you. And so Abraham went out in faith, not even knowing where he was going. He knew he was going with God, and that was enough. And so from Ur of the Chaldees, he removed himself up to Haran, and when his brother died, from there he came down into that which has become known as the Promised Land. The Canaanite nations were there. And when he arrived in that land, because of the great faith that Abraham had, God makes a threefold promise to Abraham. You'll read this in Genesis 12. You'll read it again in Genesis 13, 14, 15, and 16. All of those chapters.
That'll give you some idea of what that's like, and the whole design of that was when he got to the last section it said, and the person who gave you this would like to talk to you about becoming a part of the kingdom of God. It goes on and talks about the whole plan of salvation, the scheme of redemption. There are tools available, is what I'm saying. The best tool that I know that has led to the conversion of more than any other. I need Brad, or who's Nathaniel? Bo, how about you and Nathaniel coming, okay? And pass these out. This is Bo on this side, if you want to learn how to recognize and see the difference in them. I just put one on each row and then come back and put another one on each row and everything. I don't know how many we've got. But what you have here is a copy, and just look at it and then pass it on down the aisle. It's a copy of the Jewel Miller film strips. And they're no longer a film strip. They are a video. And I want us to take several minutes tonight and to look at that video, because what you have here is the text of the film strip and the everything that was involved in it. It'd be pretty much the text that's in the video. And if you guys just look at them, and just so you get some idea of what this... There are five lessons. And this one starts, it starts with the creation, and it goes all the way down to the time the Israelites leave the land of Egypt. And the second one starts with the Mosaical Age and covers that. And it's a five-part study. And what happened back in the 1950s, Jewel Miller decided that we just need to give to Christians something in their hands. And the history of the church back in the early 50s and the 60s, the fastest growing religion in America. And it came about because the man in the pew had access to something. He could invite his neighbors over and let's study the Bible together. And you didn't have to be a scholar. The film strip itself did the teaching. And we've got copies of this film strip, and that's why I want to introduce it tonight, is to say to you, what would be wrong with inviting a friend over and just saying, hey, we've got this video from church, let's look at it. You don't have to get them commit to watch all five of them. Let's just sit down and look at the video. And that's the reason I pass these booklets out, is just so you'll be able to see the kinds of pictures that are there and the contents that are there. And what Jewel Miller did, he went and got permission to use copies of famous paintings from the past. And you'll recognize some of these paintings. If you've got a children's Bible storybook has famous paintings in it, you'll be able to see that. And the Jewel Miller film strip was the thing that led to the fact that it put in the hands of members who up until that time wanted to teach their neighbors, but they didn't know how to do it. And I don't mean this in any bad sense at all, but back in the 50s, they were ignorant of how to do it. I'm using the word ignorant in a good way. And all of a sudden, they had the desire to do it, and now they had in their hands a way they could do this. And I don't know how many copies of the Jewel Miller film strips, the videos we have. We've got 15 copies of the old film strips, and but that technology is, I don't know who looks at film strips anymore. Jim Davis, you ever use film strips at school anymore? Thing of the past. 15 years ago, they were very, very common, but it's so very, very easy to use. And so what I want us to do is to take a few minutes and look at the beginning part of this film strip. Buzz, if you've got it ready to go, I told him I'd give him time between the two to get this one ready to go, and let's see if it's ready to go. And if somebody will brighten your eyes whenever he gets it on the screen, if we can get it on the screen. I threw Buzz a curve, and I knew he'd be able to get this one on there easily. It was the other one that scared me to death. We wouldn't be able to get there. But I'll give him a minute to try to use that. But what happened was people had a tool in their hand, and they were just able to say to friends and neighbors. Now, you've got to understand, the religious world was different back then. And I have used Jewel Miller for 30 years. I've converted some of you using Jewel Miller. I really like, and I still use a film strip a lot of times. Dave, you had a comment. I don't know if you'd heard what Dave said. The reason this is so effective, you don't have to know anything except how to turn on a DVD. And if you don't know how to do that, find a neighbor that's smart enough to turn on the DVD. And it does all of the teaching. It really, really does all of the teaching. And we may take some of the time next month. We're trying to use the time in the very best way possible. We're trying to introduce ways of being able to teach others. Buzz, we're going to be able to get it or not?
One more try.
One more try, okay. And the problem is, that this, I don't know if this means anything or not, but the first one was a CD using PowerPoint, and this is a DVD using a different technology, and so it's coming through different computers and different screens. Chris, what do you have to say? Speak loud. And I'm not sure if you heard everything. She said one of the powers of this is that with each one of these slides, there's a scripture verse that goes with it. And so that allows you an individual. And the booklet also has a test back in the back. And so if you guys, if it made them all the way back that way, if you want to pass them back over, just pass them back and let everybody look at them while Buzz is trying to fix everything, if we can make it work. And Buzz, if we're not going to be able to do it, just say... Say so, we can do something else. Oh, okay. So if you don't know how to operate a remote, operate a DVD, invite a neighbor over there. So if anybody knows where the remote is for the DVD, there are some buttons you can push on most of those DVDs. I don't know if you, that's terrible. Let me go ahead and talk about this. I use the Jill Miller film strips in Fiji. It was an astounding thing. We went down to a little village that was there, and they used to just have one store, and the name of the store was not Walmart. It was called Burns Phillips. So we went in and talked to the store owner and said, we'd like to show a Bible film tonight. And we had an extension cord, had that with us, and just the old... projector. The thing probably didn't have 200 watts of power, but in Fiji they had never seen a 1,000-watt projector or anything. And so everybody in that village came. And because they didn't have television or anything, and it became, I think we showed it either three or four nights, however long we were in that particular village. I remember we showed these Jill Miller film strips. What the plan behind all of this is to tell the story of the Bible. Where does faith come from? From hearing the story of the Bible. And so I think we may be about to hear the story of the Bible. Are we, Chuck? All right, let's look at it.
Part one of the visualized Bible study series is entitled The Patriarchal Age. During this first period of Bible history, God ruled men through family heads called patriarchs. Beginning with the creation, this Bible age reaches all the way to the time of Moses and the exodus of God's people from the land of Egypt. Families like the John Nelsons enjoy reading the Bible together daily because it contains the greatest message of the ages. God's Word is the most important book on earth because it is God's only written revelation to us. We owe it to ourselves to study the Bible daily, for when Jesus comes again, each of us will be judged by the Bible. Revelation 20:12. John Nelson is a typical Christian. He knows he will live forever, even after death. He knows also that the Bible is the only book which reveals where man came from, his purpose on the earth, and what he is to believe and do to live with God eternally. He can also know, as he reads, that every event and every person referred to in the Bible is in perfect harmony with all known secular history. Even the geographical references to rivers, lakes, physical terrain, and distances are absolutely correct. Give yourself a chance to know this book of life. Pictures painted by great artists are used throughout this series to help acquaint you with the world's only divinely inspired book, the Bible. Although about 40 different men of varying backgrounds, caste, and cultures had a part in writing the Bible over a period of 1,600 years, it contains a remarkable unity of message and harmony of purpose. This harmony is no accident. These writers were guided by divine wisdom. Therefore, the Bible is the mind of God in human language. The Apostle Peter said,
"For the prophecy came not in the old time by the will of men, but holy men of God."
Okay, we'll start here again next week, I guess. Let me mention something else. There's another DVD we had available here called Search for Truth. It's more modern, and we'll be talking about that also. Harold Pack. Who does not remember Harold? I think it was at least 50. It may have been as many as 100 of those he gave away. Sent one to every relative he had. How do you get the blood of other people off your hands? You know, Ezekiel says, if I say to the wicked, you're going to die, and you don't say anything, their blood's on your hands. And all we're trying to say is, find whatever avenue that you can use. You know, give somebody a track. Give somebody an invitation. God help us.